Choral and Cholchene. Both love and friendship are hard to find. To achieve a good life, blessed with both, you must go through many hardships. Even to whittle a stick, you must work. And for your friend or for your love, you must spare neither hands nor head. At the time when the Nifk were still numerous, Choral, a boy from the Tokta clan, and Cholchene, a girl from the Chilbi clan, lived on Sakhalin Island. When Cholchene was born, Choral's mother tied a dog's hair around her arm. Thus, Cholchene became Choral's betrothed. On the very day that the little girl picked up her first doll, Choral hunted down his first sable. When Cholchene first picked up a knife to clean a fish, Choral first raised his voice as a man and a hunter in the men's council. Choral made Cholchene a doll out of wood, and he made her a little knife. He also made her a board for working fish skins, and he carved it more beautifully than anyone had ever done before. And that is how they lived. But you cannot go through life without sorrow. The Black Death came to the island. Whether the merchants brought it from the Nipponese Islands, whether it was brought by kinsmen from the Amur, whether the wind, the typhoon, brought it on its black wings, or it came by itself over the seas, who knows? Later, when it left, no one saw where it went, either. It had come alone. It had left carrying many Nifk away with it. In every home there was someone dead. In every home tears flowed. The Black Death carried away Cholchene's parents, and it took Choral's parents, too. Both were left orphans. So Choral took his betrothed into his home, and they lived together. Choral brought home a catch every day. He was such a good fisherman that no fish could escape him. He was such a good hunter that no animal got away from him. Choral had a steady hand, a sharp eye. He was handsome, spoke in a firm voice, knew how to sing. He could do everything. Whatever Cholchene touched, Choral had made with his own hands, and he had woven a net, had built a boat, and had made a spear, a knife, a staff, a fish spear, an oar, some drinking cups and bowls of birch bark. Choral had even made a silver mirror for his betrothed. And Cholchene grew more beautiful every day. Her eyes were bright like the stars. Her lips looked as if they were sprayed with raspberry juice. Her eyebrows were like two sables marching over her eyes. And her eyelashes were so long that people made up a saying about them. Rushes grow around a deep lake. Soon it would be time for Cholchene to plait her hair into two braids. Soon it would be time for her to marry Choral. Whenever he looked at his bride-to-be, Choral's heart beat like a swallow's wings. Choral was already preparing for the wedding. Whenever he returned from the hunt, he brought back such a catch that you couldn't see him under the belts. Whenever he returned from fishing, his catch was so big that the whole village had to help carry it. Cholchene would look back at him and ask, "Why are you so lucky in everything you do, Choral?" Choral would look at his Cholchene, throw back his head, and begin to sing so beautifully that Cholchene's heart would stand still. "Anga, unga," Choral sang. "Always think of your love. Then will your heart beat and your eyes shine. Then will your feet run faster and your hands work better. Then will you move boulders as though they were pebbles. Then will you fly over the mountains and rivers. Then will the sea be like a handful of water to you. Then no one can stop you. Always think of your love. Then will you be stronger than all your enemies." One day, Cholchene went walking in the village. She was the most beautiful girl there. Her voice was like a bird's. She wore a coat of black dog fur. Her skirt was made of many-colored seal skin. Her hat was made of squirrel pelts. Old Alik, the Udon Kingan clan, saw Chorl's bride-to-be. He couldn't take his eyes off of her. He opened his mouth. He smacked his lips. He had taken a fancy to Cholchanay. "Will you come to my yurt, girl?" Cholchanay looked at him and laughed. "Alik, I am Chorl's betrothed. When the sun stands shining next to me, how can I look at a toad?" Alik closed his mouth, wiped his lips. "All right," he said. "We'll see how long your sun will shine." Alik was going to make trouble. Alik was a shaman. 12 brasses hung from his belt. 12 shamans had worn his belt before him. Shaman Alik had great powers. One day Chorl went hunting bear cubs. Cholchanay saw him off. Then she sat down to embroider her wedding robe. Alik took up his tambour, built a fire, and began to make magic, beating on his tambour and calling out the evil spirits. He made magic for a long time. A strong wind blew over the snow. The snow whirled, stood up like a pillar, began to spin. A black storm cloud covered the sky. Out of the storm cloud, a great wind came. It whirled all the snow into the air. Darkness spread over everything. The blizzard was so thick that you couldn't see your own hand in front of you. Never had there been such a blizzard. The Nifka yurts were completely covered over by the snow. Where the village had been, there was now only a smooth white field. Where the forest had been, now only the tops of pine trees poked through the snow. Chorl got caught in the blizzard. He saw that there would be no hunting that day. He sniffed at the wind and knew it would blow a long time. What should he do to save himself? Chorl looked for an empty bear's lair. He didn't find an empty one. He found one with a she-bear in it. Chorl told the she-bear that he hadn't come for her, but that the blizzard had driven him there. He lay down alongside the bear, got nice and warm, and then he fell asleep. The blizzard howled for 10 days and 10 nights. It covered up the roads, knocked down trees, and whirled the snow as high as the sky. Then the wind quieted, and the snow settled. It became very still. There was a frost, and a solid crust formed on top of the snow. Now was a good time for Chorl to go after the bear's cubs, but he couldn't wake up. Through his sleep, he thought he heard the master of the mountain say to him, "Whoever sleeps through the winter with the she-bear in her lair becomes ours, a taiga person." Chorl tried to move. He wanted to get up and run out of the lair, but he didn't have the strength to throw off his sleep and wake up. While Chorl had been lying in the lair, fur had grown all over his body, and claws had grown on his hands and feet. Chorl had become a taiga person, a bear. Cholchanay waited for her bridegroom, but no bridegroom came. The blizzard had quieted down. Day after day went by. It was time for Chorl to return, and still he didn't come. Cholchanay cried. She pined for her Chorl. Alik came to her and took her by the hand. "Why are you sitting by yourself, girl? Your bridegroom is not coming back. Come to my yurt." Cholchanay tried to pull away, but Alik was holding her hand so tightly that she couldn't get free. Cholchanay began to scream, calling for help. People came running, and Alik said to them, "The girl has been left all alone. An evil demon has carried Chorl off, and what will become of the girl now? I will take her into my yurt. I am a kind man." People were silent, afraid to say a word against Alik, and Alik dragged Cholchanay off to his yurt. He sat down on his bunk, scowled, and shook his finger at his women. His 10 wives scurried about as fast as they could to prepare his food. They cut up some fish skins, melted some seal fat, and threw it all into a pot. They threw in some berries and rice and cooked it all up. Then they crumbled some dried fish into it and added some white clay for color and flavor. And when it was cooked, the wives chewed the food and put it into Alik's mouth. All he had to do was swallow it. Alik offered some of his food to Cholchene. "Eat," he said, but Cholchene didn't take any of Alik's food. Instead, she chewed on some dried fish she had brought from home. The winter was almost gone, and still Chorl didn't come home. Every day, Alik asked Cholchene, "Will you plait your hair to 2 braids soon, girl?" "No, not soon," she answered. Cholchene chose her time carefully. One night she dressed in hunting clothes and took a spear, the knife that Chorl had made, her handbag that held her sewing, and a comb. She crept out of Alik's house and into the darkness to look for Chorl. Cholchene walked along the taiga and noticed steam curling out of a snowbank. She knew that meant that a bear's lair must be under the snow. Cholchene was tired and hungry, so she thought, "I'll awaken the bear and kill him. Who knows how much longer it will be before I find Chorl. I'll kill the bear, I'll drink my fill of his hot blood, and it will make me stronger, and I'll take some of the meat along as well." Cholchene poked the spear into the thawed patch of ground and worried the bear in his lair with it. The bear roared and climbed out of his lair. He was big. His fur shot through with silver. Cholchene had never seen such a handsome bear. "Ah, what a good catch he is." She stepped back, dug her heels harder into the ground. She raised her spear, aimed it at his heart in order to kill him quickly so he couldn't feel much pain. But the spear went off to one side and stuck in a snowbank. Only the shaft was left swinging back and forth. Cholchene grabbed her knife, drew her arm back, and struck hard at the bear's heart. But the knife curled up on itself and didn't even scratch the bear. At that, Cholchene closed her eyes so she would not see her death coming. But the bear said to her, "Do not be afraid, my Cholchene. It is I, Chorl." "You are an evil demon," cried Cholchene. "You bewitched my knife and my spear." "No, Cholchene," the bear said to her. "I made that knife and that spear. They still remember me, and that's why they couldn't harm me. I am Chorl." He told her all that had happened since last she saw him. Then they realized that all this misfortune must be the doing of Alik, who wanted Cholchene for his wife. They sat down to think. What should they do? As long as Alik was alive, Chorl would remain a bear. But they mustn't kill Alik, since he was of their own blood, and how could they spill their own blood? It would be a great sin. A sin like that is not forgiven. Chorl said, "Alik has his own demon. If his demon is killed, Alik will die. The demon dwells in the master of the mountain's house, in a pot near a post at the top of a stone slab. The way there lies toward the sunset, but I cannot go. A live bear does not go to the master of the mountain. The road there is hard." Cholchene thought a while and said, "I will go to the master of the mountain. I will kill that demon." The bear rose and took the spear out of the snowbank, straightened the knife, and gave them both back to Cholchene. They said goodbye, and Cholchene started off toward the sunset. Now, whether she walked for a long time, I do not know. Cholchene did not count her steps. She did not stop on the way. She flew over the rivers on her spear. She flew over mountains on her spear. She passed 9 rivers. She passed 9 lakes. She passed 9 mountain peaks. She wasn't thinking of herself. She was thinking of Chorl. Suddenly she saw a stone mountain whose summit disappeared into the clouds. It had neither ledges nor steps. Sheer rock rose from the earth straight up to the sky. It was solid stone. How was she to climb it? Cholchenu took Chorl's knife and threw it at the mountain. "Do your work, knife. Help me rescue your master from this misfortune." The knife drove itself into the stone. Sparks flew in all directions as the knife started to chisel the stone, carving out steps. Cholchenu began to climb the steps. Meanwhile, the sun went into Izhur to sleep. The sky people kindled the lights in the night sky, and Cholchenu kept climbing up the mountain. She wasn't thinking of herself. She was thinking of Chorl, of his misfortune as she kept climbing the mountain. The sun awoke and opened the door of Izhur. The sky people extinguished the lights of the night, and Cholchenu was still climbing the mountain. The knife jumped ahead of her, striking the stone. Sparks were scattering in all directions, and Cholchenu kept climbing step by step. She wasn't looking down. She wasn't thinking about herself. Cholchenu stepped onto the last step. She sharpened her knife on the stone and put it away in its case. She looked down and almost fell. The earth was so far below her that rivers stretched like little threads and the hills looked like sable droppings. Cholchenu went still farther. She saw a tall house. Its logs were made of stone, its posts of iron. The house was so tall that no matter how she craned her neck, she could not see the roof. A serpent with scales of stone lay before the door. Cholchenu could see only his head, as his body was lost in the fog. That's how big the serpent was. He was looking at Cholchenu with his green eyes, staring without ever blinking. A cold chill gripped Cholchenu's knees and started moving up her legs. Her hands grew weak. How could she manage him? Then Cholchenu's handbag came to life and began to move. Out of it, Cholchenu took a needle made of bone and a thread made of sinew and threw them in the serpent's eyes. The needle started shuttling in and out of the serpent's eyes, up and down, now piercing the upper lid, now the lower, pulling the thread after it. Before the chill had reached Cholchenu's waist, the needle had already sewn one of the serpent's eyes shut and was starting with the other. The serpent shook his head back and forth. He couldn't understand what was happening and why his eyes were closing. The bone needle sewed the serpent's second eye closed, and at once the chill left Cholchenu. Now she could move her feet, and she ran up to the door. The door opened itself before her, and beyond the door was another door. In front of this door lay a great lizard. Cholchenu had never seen a lizard like this before. It was made of all iron. His black jaws were open, and a forked tongue quivered inside of his mouth. The lizard blew on Cholchenu, and her legs sank into the earth up to her knees. And Cholchenu took the thimble from her handbag and threw it and got it right in the lizard's mouth where it plugged up his throat. And the lizard tried to blow on Cholchenu again, but he couldn't. Cholchenu pulled her legs out of the ground and ran up to the door. The door opened itself before her. Beyond that door was a third door. A tiger guarded it. He bared his teeth, and his teeth were as long as your forearm. He beat the ground with his tail, and his tail was as thick as a larch tree trunk. Cholchenu threw her comb into the tiger's mouth. The comb lodged itself across the tiger's throat and wouldn't budge. The wider the tiger opened his mouth, the longer the comb's teeth became. The tiger roared, but he couldn't do anything to Cholchenu. She saw that the tiger was too busy to bother her, so she stepped up to the door, and the door opened itself before her. Beyond that door was the master's yurt. Everything in that yurt was the same as in ordinary people's homes, except that there were stars on the ceiling and a sun in every window. On the door near the bunk lay more animal skins than you could count. The master put the souls of killed animals into these skins so that the animals would not vanish from the earth, no matter how many of them were killed by hunters. Cholchenu looked around. She saw that the ceiling was held up by posts. Near one post lay a stone slab. On the stone slab stood a pot. An old man was sitting on the bunk. His face was radiant. Cholchenai realized that this was the master of the mountain himself. She got down on her knees, folded her hands, and asked him to hear her tale. She told him of her misfortune and why she had come. The master had said to her, "Of course, I know Chorl. He was a good hunter, did everything according to law, did not pour water into the campfire, did not cut the bear with a sword, did not break the bear's bones. It's bad that such misfortune has befallen him. Look into that pot. Many shaman's demons live there. Which one is Alik's? I don't know. You are a brave girl. You have borne much sorrow. Take what you came for. Go up to the pot and shout, 'Alik's demon, go serve your master.' And when it comes out, grab it." And Cholchenai did as she was told. No sooner did she shout, "Alik's demon, go serve your master," than a black worm jumped out of the pot, and Cholchenai grabbed it with her hand, held it tight in her fist, and ran. She came to the edge of the mountain, climbed astride her spear, and leaped down. She flew with the wind whistling in her ears, crags and boulders rushing by. The spear flew with Cholchenai holding onto it with both hands. The spear flew over mountains and forests, over lakes and rivers. And at last, the spear reached the place where Chorl was waiting for his betrothed. Cholchenai got off the spear and went up to Chorl. Chorl said, "To whom will I leave my bearskin?" "Someone will turn up," said Cholchenai. Just then she saw Alik running toward them. When Alik saw Cholchenai, he shouted, "So that's where you are, worthless girl. What a time I had finding you." "You shouldn't have bothered looking for me," said Cholchenai. "You looked for me, but instead you have found your fate." Then she threw down the demon she had been holding in her fist. She stepped on it and crushed it. Alik began to reel and stumble. He got down on all fours. Then the bearskin slid off Chorl, jumped onto the shaman, wrapped itself around him. Alik became a bear. It served him right. Why did he wish to harm Chorl and Cholchenai? Cholchenai raised her spear, and this frightened Alik, and he fled into the taiga. Chorl and Cholchenai took each other by the hand and started for home. On the way, Cholchenai plaited her hair into two braids. They married. They lived a long life, and until their last day, they loved each other very much. You see, people treasure what comes hard.